One. Hey Kareem, thank you so much for talking to me today about Infinity Pool. Loved the movie, watched it twice now. I will be sending you my therapy bills. But no, it's great. As always, excellent work. Jumping right into the pre-production part of Infinity Pool. So I think I read that this was similar to what y'all did on Possessor, which was Brandon would come to you with a script. You would break down scene by scene and then talk about kind of the visual language. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Infinity Pool took a while to get to camera, a little bit like Possessor. In fact, Infinity Pool was written while Possessor was like in a rut of getting financed. Possessor took 7 years from the first draft to when we actually were able to complete the movie. So it took a while. And within those 7 years, it was about 4 of those years where we're going to make the movie, it's financed, we're going, and then it stopped, and then we had to. So there was constant delay. So during that time period, Brandon wrote Infinity Pool based on a lot of his experiences that he had in some of these tourist resorts, and a lot of the stuff is real, like seven. Not all of it, but certainly some of the at these tourist resorts are actually in the movie, like all the cultural appropriation things and all that. That's stuff he saw there. So he didn't invent any of that stuff. Stuff that might shock and offend some people actually was there in existence, flat out. So based on those experiences, we developed ideas and we're simultaneously sort of developing the language for Infinity Pool while we're doing Possessors. So that's why the movies have some similarities. But, Infinity Pool, the idea was to expand on what we had already done with Possessor. So, we went on a scouting trip. We actually scouted Croatia and Hungary before we shot Possessor. So along with Brandon and Rob Cotterill, our producer and first AD on both movies, one of the producers, there's many producers, the main producer on the films, Film Forge and Rob. We went to visit these locations, so that informed a lot of the visuals and a lot of the visual styles. And then we went and we did Possessor, but we always had the material from these early scouts that we did. And because we had done so much with the practical hallucinations and effects and things like that with Possessor, we stepped it up for Infinity Pool and came up with other sort of technical ideas to do it. And again, everything in Infinity Pool is practical. All of those hallucinations, all of those opticals and things like that are all done practically. None of that stuff is done with CGI or anything. It's all done in front of the camera live.
Wow, that's amazing. That's actually what I was going to ask you because that's very impressive. Like it's great to hear that it's like you're taking the building blocks from the previous film and just building on it. And it sounds like, hopefully we'll get another team up collab where it'll build up even more from things from Infinity Pool. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've come to the limit of that look with Infinity Pool. So for the new stuff, for Brandon's new stuff, we're talking about doing a very different look,
Oh, nice.
and using very different techniques and things like that. So we're already beginning the development on Brandon's upcoming productions. And how we're gonna try and step up the look of that and switch it up a bit and use different cameras and different techniques. Because I think, while I'm super happy, of course, with both Possessor and Infinity Pool, not only as films, which I'm very, very proud of them as movies, But I think as just the visuals, I think we've done it. I'm very happy with the visuals on both of those films, but I think we've reached the limit of what we can do with that. And now we're going to go for a very different look, which is exciting for us as filmmakers. You know, I mean, we always, you know, we're friends, so we're always hanging out and talking about ideas and ways we can do things in a new manner, to also keep audiences, you know, surprised. We don't want every movie just to be the same. We want every movie to be quite different. So, you know, and like for the hallucination sequences and stuff like that, instead of using like color gels, we used a different kind of gel film, so to speak, called dichroic film. And what that is it's kind of looks like a gel, but depending on the angle you look at it, the color changes. So it has like different colors within the spectrum, depending on the angle you shine it. So the hallucinations, again, much like in Possessor, we reprojected the hallucinations on a screen in my living room. We do all of these, you know, re-photographing and special effects sequences majoritarily in my living room with Brandon and myself, usually just alone. And we re-photographed it with what's called a split field diopter. So it's sort of like a magnifying glass you would put in front of a lens, but only halfway, as you see them in a lot of Brian De Palma movies, for example, where half of the screen is in focus and then the background is in focus, but an object is very close to the lens and both are maintained in focus. And what we did was we wrapped the dichroic film around that, reprojected the rushes, played with the split field diopter, so the magnifying glass portion only partially enters the frame and exits, so you can actually adjust what's in focus and what's not manually. And then we shone a light onto the loop of dichroic film that is draped over the split field diopter, which gives you different color effects depending on the angle of where the light passes through it. So it was a very, you know, belabored, complex process that we had to do a few times, because it was a lot of rushes. I mean, that orgy is not short. So
as most orgies, you know.
Yes, exactly. You know, if you're going to orgy well. So, you know, it definitely, you know, there was a lot of rushes that we had to go through. And because we did the dichroic film effects before the edit of the sequences, we had to take all the rushes and do the special effects on everything, not knowing whether or not they would be in the movie. It wasn't a question of just editing the movie together, because the editing of the sequences depended on what the optical effects would be during it. So we had to do all the rushes, and it was hours.
Wow. That's mind blowing. That's mind boggling, because again, I think it's so seamlessly and well done that you kind of just assume that it was maybe done digitally that's incredible. And yeah. I think that probably speaks to a lot of like how the practical effects are done. I mean, it's like, I feel like it's probably little to no CGI as far as like the actual like gore and all the, I think one of my pet peeves, is like CGI blood. I hate that so much because it's so lazy. And I feel like, you know, when you take the time not only to, clearly you could have, like with the psychedelic stuff, clearly that could have all been CGI, but I think it just has a better look, it being practical.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. And there's no CGI blood in the movie or anything like that. All the blood is done live with Dan Martin and Tracy Loader, our amazing special makeup effects artists who are longtime friends and collaborators and absolutely brilliant. You know, they did a phenomenal job as always on it. I mean, there's a little cleanup, things like that, that there always is, with some practical stuff. But, you know, like some movies, they have an absolute, you know, phone book of names in the end credits of people who work on the CGI and the visual effects in the movie. In this movie, we only had one person, a very talented person named Andy Robinson, not the guy from Hellraiser, but, he did a wonderful, absolutely wonderful job on cleanup. Primarily, the biggest CGI effect in the entire movie is cleaning the knee pads off of Alexander Skarsgård's double during the execution scene, like things like that, you know, erasing shadows, fine adjustments of, you know, sometimes in prosthetics, you'll have a tube seam line. So not touching the blood or the gore effect, but just smoothing out a seam line for some of the slit throats, blade extensions, things like that. Those are the only CGI effects. None of the actual gore is CGI whatsoever. It's all as it is. Although not to diminish Andy's work on the movie, which I think was great, but it's cleanup. It's only cleanup. Another one of the biggest CGI scenes is Alexander Skarsgård getting out of a bed when we shot it, because we had to shoot it quite quick. There was some shadows, like camera shadows and stuff, that went on his shirt. He erased the shadows. Like that kind of stuff. You know, James Vanderwater, our editor, who's absolutely brilliant, really collaborated very, very closely with Brandon. Brandon is a very hands-on editor. You can tell it's a Brandon Cronenberg movie. He's very, very, very involved with the editing. And with James, who's also absolutely brilliant, they really work closely on this hallucination scene. So there's a lot of subliminal edits in those things. So when it hits home video, you'll have fun with the pause button and the step forward button, you know, because you'll discover all this stuff that's hidden within those sequences. There's an absolute litany of stuff hidden in those sequences. And of course, you know, I have to see them ad nauseum a million times, frame by frame. We have to color grade it and also make sure the online edit went well and everything. So I know everything is in there. And I can tell you, there's a lot of fun stuff in there. Nice. That because of just the way your brain absorbs images, you probably won't tell just off the top. There's some stop motion in those scenes too that Lee Hardcastle in the UK, along with Dan Martin, did. So there's actually some stop motion brief inserts that are genuine stop motion within the orgy scenes and some of the hallucination scenes that Lee Hardcastle did with Dan Martin. Lee Hardcastle, of course, who is a very well-known and excellent stop motion animator in the UK. So yeah, we went nuts.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you know, if I wasn't already really excited for the home video release, I'm like 10 times more excited now. You know, you touched briefly on the execution scene, which is definitely one of the more sort of visceral, disturbing moments of the film. I'm kind of curious, like with the kid and like it being like pretty graphic, like I could see, like, I mean, as perverse as it sounds, I feel like I would have a field day if I was that actor, just getting to like have fun with what could definitely be a very grim sort of tone on set. So I was kind of wondering if you could talk about filming that scene and was this kid kind of really into it, like the actor that played the I can't recall the character's name. Sorry.
Miro Miron's son, or Miro Myron.
Oh, okay.
Miro Myron's son. He was great. He was amazing. A young actor, a Hungarian actor. He was from the Hungarian side, named Krzysztof. Krzysztof was wonderful. He was super cool and never shocked or anything. He got into it, and just like the facial expressions he could pull off and everything were really phenomenal. I mean, that was a really difficult day because, you know, it wasn't a small independent movie. It was definitely a sizable one, but for various production reasons, and the production in Hungary and Croatia was very difficult. Certainly our Canadian producers, I think, and our American producers were big heroes dealing with everything that was thrown their way, you know, during the production, which is extremely tough. So a lot of days had to be cut from the schedule and things condensed, which was normally not done in Europe. You don't do long days like you do in North America. You know, so that was tricky because the execution scenes, both executions in the movie, had to be done on the same day. So it was a really long day and really technically challenging for Dan and Tracy and the special makeup effects team. It was there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of slit throats, a lot of stabbing. And we ended up doing a bunch of inserts later of like the knife stabs and chest inserts. Cause when you do big sequences like that, a lot of times you just save some of the inserts for later, knowing that that's when they're going to, you'll have the time to really massage them and do them well. But the gross majority of this stuff was still done during that long day. You know, like one of the little kids showed up as an extra, and their parents were there, and we already shot a master shot because, you know, when you shoot scenes with doubles, you have to shoot one side with the real person, not made up, first. And then you have a photo double or a stunt performer filling in with them. And when it's dirty over, the camera's shooting over them, and then you have to make them up and put them, you know. So it's complicated to do the dynamic. And it turns out we were shooting the stuff before the blood. And anytime you do a big sequence with blood, you shoot out the entire everything that you will see where the blood will hit first. Mm-hmm. You do everything pre-blood, then you do blood, make sure the effect works, and then you do everything post-blood because it affects the set. It sort of kind of destroys the set, so to speak. So you have to do everything before the blood, you do all the blood, and then you do everything after the blood. With what was established on the take that you printed, and you said, okay, this is a good take. So we had a little kid that was an extra member of the family, but a really young kid that we shot that side of it. And then, you know, we're about to do all the blood stuff. And then suddenly, you know, again, this was a pretty frequent thing that would happen during this production. Like, we expected something, and then suddenly they would throw this with this incredible loop out of nowhere from the, you know, from the Hungarian side. Or whatever. And they were told, oh, this kid can't see blood, but we've already shot the wide shots with this kid in there. So the careful viewer will notice that all of the shots after the executions come in on the side of the bleachers are just a little tighter, avoiding this missing kid because of that. So Krzysztof was no problem. Krzysztof was all like, give me more blood. I'll look terrifying. I'm totally down. But this little kid, suddenly we were told, no, you can't show blood to this kid. And it's like, all right, guys. Well, that was just, you know, that was a very, very, very minor incident in the litany of like surprises and sort of subterfuge that happened every day on the production. But, you know, we barreled through it. And again, it's a great testament to our, I think our producers, certainly the Canadian producers, had to go through a lot, and Rob Cotterill as well really helped us a lot throughout that whole thing.
Nice. Now, I think that's like kind of a good segue to talk about. So there, of course, is the infamous NC-17 cut, and then the R-rated cut, which is in theaters right now. I was lucky enough to get the unrated NC-17 cut, which is, I don't know exactly like what was cut for the R, but I have a pretty good idea. Let's just say. I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about like some of the maybe like racier scenes, like how like there's the Alexander Skarsgård scene. Like I'm sure there was like trying to like think of a nice way to put that. Like, was there a stunt double for that scene, the scene on the beach? People that have seen the
Okay. So the thing is that the difference between the R cut and the NC-17 cut, it's actually not that huge. They're little like bits and pieces here and there. I think the R cut still plays very well. It still is the movie. You'll still see the movie when you go to see the R cut. So it's in by no means saying like, you know, don't see the R cut. And particularly, I think on a big screen, it works very well. And we supervised both versions of the movie. Brandon approved both versions of the movie. So you know, both are Infinity Pool. Well, okay, anybody who even sees the R cut can imagine what is missing. It's the scene on the beach. Enough people have spoiled exactly what it is. You know, like a lot of journalists have talked about it. So it's a close-up of a penis ejaculator. Okay. So it's not real. It's a special effect.
Okay.
It's a prosthetic. It's actually just a silicone penis that is plumbed with fake semen, and it's just a really good special effect. It's not, none of it's real.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's all special effects. So, you know, you see similar things on HBO all the time. Anybody see The Deuce? Same thing.
Yep.
You know, watch The White Lotus, all the fake prosthetic penises in that. It's the same thing. Yeah, but, you know, like the MPA freaks out about that kind of thing. But then you open up HBO and you see that kind of thing all the time. You know, there's special effects. It's not real. It's fake. It's not technical pornography. It's fake. So, you know, that's just the hypocrisy, I think, or the double standard between things you could just go and click on your television, which are as graphic and no problem, or you go into a cinema where you can actually control who goes into the cinema. You can actually protect the door and things like that. But then you have to cut this stuff out. To me, it makes no sense, but that's just the world we're living in. But your answer is it's special effects. And it's very convincing. Yes, people think it's real, but I mean,
I was kind of thinking effects. I was like thinking, well, it was probably an effect. And I was like thinking, well, I mean, they do that, like, as you said, like a ton of times. Like, I guess like Boogie Nights comes to mind, like kind of in a famous example. But yeah, that I mean, that is very strange. Like, you're 100% like spot on with, like, you know, I feel like you see that, like you said, you can see that on TV, sometimes even more graphic. I know I did read that, like, you know, as you were saying, Brandon did supervise the cut, so everything still was very seamless. And I think probably like the cut scenes probably amount to what, maybe like a minute, maybe not even.
It's like a few seconds, but the thing is that they're like, to keep the timing the same, we replace shots from other things in the movie. So just so it doesn't feel like it's an abrupt edit. So there's actually shots in the R-rated version that are not in the NC-17 version. Hmm. So particularly during the orgy and stuff, and replaced it with some really cool shots. So it's not like you're getting a lesser experience or anything from going to see the R cut, just to replace certain images in the orgy sequence they didn't want. We just went in the rushes and found other really cool hallucinogenic things that are just as cool. And like, you'd be surprised what they let by in the R cut during the orgy scene. Like, a lot of stuff was let by that you never would think would be in an R-rated film. And there it is, you know, I mean, it's there. Maybe because also they might not have understood actually what was going on, because it's like, you know, maybe not within their lexicon to actually understand what they were seeing, but they're seeing a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. I mean, that's so interesting. Like, I think like the one effect that maybe didn't disturb me, but definitely like has been living in my head, is the nipple.
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
And I believe that's in the R-rated cut, right?
It is in the R-rated cut. Nothing was censored from that in the R-rated cut. So I guess we'll say spoiler alert now for anybody, because what's hilarious is a lot of people who saw the nipple didn't really understand what is actually happening. I think people can interpret it because, you know, we reshot everything with these effects, so it becomes a little bit dreamy. You know, it's actually pooping. If you see it uncut, the nipple is pooping and somebody eats it. So that's literally what is there. You know, so you can be proud to know that the MPA let out and let by a boob that poops, and without actually realizing that's what was happening. So yes, that's happening. And that's all effects. Again, obviously human bodies cannot do that. It's a very, very good effect by Dan Martin and Tracy Loader and Dan's entire team in the UK that did that. And again, because it's a part of this really hallucinogenic trip, you kind of don't know what's happening, and you're kind of like interpreting yourself what is going on. The reality of what we shot, if you saw it on the set, you'd be like, oh, you know, and bring the barf bag. But it becomes actually kind of beautiful and weird and trippy, still disturbing, with the re-photographing techniques that we did and everything. It's meant to be dreamy and hallucinogenic, and that you can't really tell what's going on. But yeah, that's that, spoiler alert, is actually what we shot.
Now, is it fair to say that, like, with all the effort that kind of went into, like, particularly like the psychedelic stuff, and how that was very like painstaking, would you say that like to date, this is the most maybe technical sort of shoot that you've worked on?
No, I think there's been a lot, like most of my movies are super technical because they're all they're genre movies that have special effects and things like that. No, I wouldn't say this is the most technical movie I've worked on. Par for the course. I mean, there were a lot of effects and things like that, but most of my movies have that. So it was just sort of a part of the usual thing. The difference is that on some of the other pictures I've done, there's a lot of CGI, and CGI is the answer to things, and everything is designed around CGI, which usually those are the larger studio pictures I do, which, you know, that's just a part of the language that they're comfortable with. So, okay, cool. Sure, I can do it. But this is more a part of the artisanal, practical side of filmmaking, which I also enjoy as much. I think both are good. You know, can't say one is better than the other. They're just different. So some movies are more about CGI, and that's great. And other movies are more about practical effects, and that's great too. You just have to plan things in a certain way, knowing that one thing will take a certain amount of time and another thing will take another amount of time, and plan all the technical things to go around it. No problem. So yeah, I mean, it was technical. It was certainly a difficult movie to do, but again, those difficulties didn't necessarily come from the content or when the cameras, I mean, the actors were amazing. The actors were just absolutely phenomenal. It was a tough shoot for more just like a lot of practical production oriented reasons. You know, when we showed up there and sort of a lot of the co-production stuff, I think maybe it was a pretty big movie for Croatia, and they weren't used to doing movies sort of necessarily of that size with the crew we had. You know, in Hungary, vice versa, Hungary was extremely busy. So, you know, we a lot of resources that were promised weren't given and things like that. But that said, we had some amazing Hungarian crew members that were absolutely phenomenal, really phenomenal. Particularly I have to say a big hats off to my B camera operator and my second unit director of photography, Agnieszka Pokazdy. She was phenomenal and a really wonderful and brilliant DP in her own right. And that was a really pleasure. The camera team, the Hungarian camera team, was wonderful. And, you know, the grips and everything, you know, it was a lot of good people. And, you know, also you know, I had a very, very good Croatian gaffer as well, who I liked very much. So there was a lot of good people. It was just very busy in Hungary. So the Marvel show will get all the big gear, you know, like I was promised a stabilized remote, had to do all those spinning shots on the techno crane. It was a movie bird crane, actually, that we did all those spinning crane shots in the opening. And, you know, promised for weeks, you're going to get it. And then suddenly Moon Knight wants to keep it. And then it's like, fuck you, little movie. You know, we'll get it. And that was just the kind of stuff we were facing all the time. It was sort of like promise, promise, then fuck you, you know? So that wasn't amazing, but you know, whatever. That's just the regular difficulties of production one encounters. You know, you overcome them and you go with as best a, you know, attitude with solutions that you can, and then, you know, you make it work. It's what filmmaking is.
Oh yeah. I feel like, I know I've had filmmaker friends that are like, it's just, you know, it described to me like it's a series of fires you just need to put out, and you have to pivot. And if you can't pivot, then you shouldn't be making movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's constantly, and particularly on this one, you had to be pretty nimble to deal with all these curveballs thrown. But we did, and I think everybody's proud of the movie, and I think the Hungarian crew, I hope, is proud of the movie. I think everybody worked really hard on the movie. Certainly, you know, again, I had some amazing Hungarian crew members who really worked hard, and Croatian as well. So, you know, everybody put their heart and soul into it, and we all came out on the other side.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's a great movie. I love how, and I know this was noted in some of the reviews, which is like, you know, this definitely is sort of like White Lotus Goes to Hell. And I love how, you know, and, you know, to like the visual side of it, how, you know, when they're on the resort, I mean, it's just like this, like desaturated, just unpleasant. It just looks very, for something that should be like sunny and colorful, it just has this cold, detached feeling, which I think fits so well with this movie.
Cool. I mean, yeah, that we wanted to go in the opposite of the expectations. I personally am not a huge fan of tourism. I do not like these resorts. We stayed on that actual resort that we were shooting in Croatia, a town called Šibenik. It's called Amadrija Park. If you want to go visit the Infinity Pool Resort, you can. And Amadrija Park in Šibenik, Croatia. You know, we were there, we were a part of it. And a lot of like the surrealism we encountered is very much reflected in the movie. You know, the entire crew stayed on it. So it was a really like kind of a surreal environment, just shooting there. But I mean, the original, like we had a thought a ways back, even with Brandon, we should shoot this movie in black and white, which was, of course, that wouldn't have passed with the financiers and everything. But so we came up with a sort of play on color that I hope works in the movie. And there's a lot of color in the movie still, but it just shows up in very strategic points. But the overall image is, yes, a very soft contrast, more desaturated. Some people think we shot it on film, even though we didn't. We shot it using the Arriel Exa Mini, just with certain techniques, certain compression file techniques and certain types of lenses and in a specific color grade look that makes it feel very organic and very filmic. But, you know, I think you don't need to shoot on film these days. I know maybe some people would call that heresy, but I think, you know, with how good it, particularly the Arri cameras have gotten, and with certain lens combos, you can make it feel pretty much all the same way to an audience, and visually very, very close. I mean, we fooled some cinematographers thinking that we shot Infinity Pool on film. So
yeah, that's funny, because I was actually going to ask if it was shot on film, because it does, as you say, have that kind of wonderful sort of film like texture and quality, which I think is great, because, you know, I completely understand that, you know, shooting on film probably presents a lot of its own sort of challenges now. And it's probably more expensive to shoot on film than digital.
I mean, it is. My feeling is just like, I think a lot of young people are very excited to shoot on film because it's like exotic, it's cool, you know. I'm older, so I come from the generation where you had bad days at the lab, where you had to deal with instability problems that pop up out of nowhere and have to reshoot stuff, you know, like you could swear it was in focus when you shot it, but then you get the rushes and it's out of focus, you know, hairs in the gate, flashing, power failures at the lab, which I've encountered. So you lose a bunch of your footage. It's, you know, this is not worth it when ultimately it's going to be projected digitally for me. That's my opinion. You know, sure, if absolutely someone's like, you must shoot on film to do this movie, and I think the movie's worth it, okay, sure, I can fucking, you know, I've done it for decades, so why not? But I think actually the film stocks these days are just not as exciting to me. Like maybe shooting on reversal film, maybe. But you know, like most of the Kodak stocks, which is the only motion picture stock you can get now, they're all based for electronic post-production. They're not based for photochemical printing. So, hey, if we were still shooting on film and making photochemical prints, and if it was financially viable to make those photochemical prints play in cinemas around the world, great. I would do it. But everything's being projected digitally anyways. It's only going to end up there. So other than in a few very special rep cinemas, but it's not worth, like, I'm not insecure. Like, I don't need that, like, sort of insecurity of we shot it on film. Like, so many movies these days come out and the film format it's shot in is a part of its publicity materials. Like, I don't give a shit. What's your script? You know, like, how are the actors? How's your visual storytelling? Other than the fact of you shot on a negative, that doesn't mean shit, because you could just go into a color grading suite, knock back the contrast, add some grain, put halation on your highlights. It'll be the same fucking thing. So, you know, you better have something more powerful to push the promotion of your film other than, but it was shot on film. Like, yeah. You know, that doesn't make your movie good. What's your script? You know, so I think with the technology today, you can get that vibe going across. And, you know, some people will be like, heresy, I shot my movie in 16 millimeter and I'm an adult now. It's like, no, you know, all you've done is made a blurry movie that doesn't, you know, like doesn't fit the compression of the streaming service that paid for your movie. So all I'm seeing now, if my internet isn't the fastest in the world, a bunch of squares where you're trying to put film grain. So it's like, I just find that a very sort of gimmicky thing these days to say we shot it on film. I think you could just make just as good a movie on digital if you know what you're doing, and it'll look the same or very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as you were saying, and, you know, this is something that is from like a writer side and a critic side. I'm like, you don't need a million plus budget. Just have a great script. Mm-hmm. That's the foundation. I mean, it's like, you know, any of these sort of gimmicks, as you were saying, like, it doesn't mean anything if your movie's crap to begin with, to be frank. So I'm probably going to wrap up here soon, but I know it's very early days. But I guess you can confirm that you are working on another project with Brandon.
Oh, we have a few things in development, yeah. And we're doing stuff, and I have some other films coming up too that I'm working on. Of course, the irony is, even though we're not shooting on film, we still call them films. So, you know, maybe just old habits die hard, and maybe, you know, shooting on film is amazing and is the future. But I think digital is perfectly fine. And again, if they were just playing them on film, sure, but they ain't. So I'm a realist. And we're working on new stuff with Brandon, working on other stuff that is shot on the Alexa 35, which I think is the camera that closely most resembles film. If you use certain settings on it, I think it's a very, very impressive new piece of technology that Arri has put out. So hopefully I'll begin a new one soon using that camera, we'll take it from there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much again for talking about the movie. I love how like technical you get, because it's, I mean, I can appreciate it, but like, I'm not like a technician, so it kind of goes over my head. But I have to imagine that there's somebody watching this that's like taking down notes, you know.
Taking that old asshole, we should all shoot on film. You know, and great, if that's what you need, then cool. Again, that's just one person's opinion, and I think a cinematographer should use whatever medium they feel expresses the best for their film. So, you know, I say that as my general opinion, but if I had the right movie and they're like, we have to shoot on film, like, okay, cool. You know, but I think better start with a good script first. That's the best visual technique you can use on any movie is a good script.
Absolutely. If you don't have a good foundation, then you're not gonna, I mean, it doesn't matter what you shoot it on. So, yeah. As I mentioned earlier, Infinity Pool is in theaters right now. Go see it, support it. It's a great movie. And yeah, I definitely also look forward to the home video, which I guess we'll definitely have both versions of it, I'm assuming.
I'm not sure. All I know is eventually the unrated version will come out, but the actual roll through I'm not aware of. But yeah, I do know eventually it will come out.
And like and like you were saying earlier, like the R-rated cut still is the movie. It's still fucking amazing. You still get a lot of gross, trippy, awesome stuff. So definitely don't let that dissuade you from going out and seeing it, because it's awesome. And yeah, I'm pretty confident that like we will get probably a edition with both versions of it. So again, thanks so much. Thank you so much for like talking to me, and I hope we can talk again sometime soon.
Right on. Excellent. Thanks, everyone.